Hey, Steve, it's me. Call me back when you can. I don't mean to alarm you, but if you got a roll of the heavy duty aluminum foil, your standard duty's fine. I'm gonna need you to make a hat and call me back as soon as possible. Me and Max, we just got back from a little jaunt out on the Bay of the Green, and we were testing these new Livingston Pro Rippers. Boy, they're using alien technology, Steve. There's a language that has not been discovered yet. I mean, you need to call me quick, because our live well was overflowing, and we were only out there for an hour. I mean, it's... Please call me.
Back when I started muskie fishing, we didn't have those fancy headlocks or matlocks. The only matlock we had starred Andy Griffith.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. What are you doing, Jay Bird?
Steve Arino. What are you doing?
Buddy, I am wet and cold.
You're drying off.
It is. If you live in the South or have the Weather Channel, you have seen that it has rained 4,963 inches in the last...
Or if you listen to the national news, you're not far from Nashville, and I heard about that earlier in the week.
It's been like 3 inches here. Nashville got 7 inches of rain in 48 hours.
That's too much.
I don't think I've ever heard of 7 inches of rain anywhere. It's like, whoa.
Oh.
If that was snow, it would probably be like 43 feet. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man. But,
cool news.
Boy, I bet that is messing up the water columns, huh?
Yeah, it's a crapshoot. It is really, really crazy. However, speaking of weather, remember last week, I just throw it out there and I'm running my mouth about if we could find a weatherman.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who we found?
A weatherman.
A freaking weatherman. Put on your big girl panties. Next week's episode, going to have a weatherman. You know, he might give you the 5-day forecast. Who knows? So
this is a professional meteorologist for a TV station, and he muskie fishes.
Yeah. What do you want?
So this is going to be really cool, because he's going to have some interesting introspective.
Got the degrees in with the clouds and the skies. He went to the Cloud and Sky University.
Mm-hmm. One of the best.
Whatever. One of the best. It's no ITT Tech, I'll tell you that much. But it's close. It's up there.
No, sir.
No, sir. Do not confuse my degree. Anyway, no, we're going to have a legit meteorologist on the podcast and to sort of explain some of the things that we throw out there and how it affects muskie fishing, or how it can affect muskie fishing. So we're going to dig in deep on that one.
Yeah.
Couple house cleaning things. If you've won a contest in the last like 2 weeks, I'm sorry. I'm slow shipping. I'll get it sent out this week. I've been on the boat every day. With that
the thing
being,
is, I'm not. I get stuff out right away.
Because you literally, that is your job. Me, I mill about. You know, I'm milling about and doing this and doing that. I heard you've been remodeling.
I give you constant reminders, though.
Constant.
I try to help.
Reminders. I've heard you've been remodeling, eh?
Oh, baby. Yeah. Spur of the moment. All next thing you know, it's like half the store is completely changed, and it was just like some really, really tedious. I mean, okay, imagine taking all 400 SKUs of mayhem pegs, and all loose baits, and moving them.
That's just
and
a few thousand.
And then everything was in its
bills.
Place, gets moved through, and then the thing was over there, that gets moved, and then anyway. Yeah, today we finished the slammer wall.
And slammer
did a new slammer
wall.
Section, all the slammer crankbaits. Man, do they look it? I did this social media post for because it has this weird hypnotizing effect on it when you look at it, when you mm-hmm. walk by it. And, Tom walked by it, and he took a look at it, and I looked over at him. This is what clued me in that it might be a hypnotizing effect, because he was actually starting to drool a little bit.
Is this who was drooling? Fred?
Tom.
Oh, Tom. My apologies. Fred does.
So I don't know if it was the visual or if it was something else, that caused it. But anyway, I look at it as a good thing, and they look great. So yeah, just working on stuff like that at the shop.
It's mixing it up. It'll be fun. You know,
yeah, it looks really good in there. It really does.
It's crazy how many bays you have crammed in that building.
Well, that's the thing, is jamming all the stuff in there.
Just try not to
buy stuff and, you know, have stuff online that we can't display. So we got to put it somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of seeing the store, July 17th, Muskie Shop Bash. Be there or be squirrel.
It's right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the summer event in the Northwoods.
Joe Booker will be there. Smitty will be there.
Yes, sir.
People that are on the schedule to work that day will be there.
Most importantly, you're going to be there.
Elmer will be there.
A lot of people looking forward to that. Steve Paul in the flesh. It's going to be fun.
We're
going to do some fishing together.
We're going to do some fishing. There might be an appearance from the guru.
Well, I hope so.
If you go inside and check out at the POS, ask for Jody Michael. She might be there.
Mm-hmm.
That is really not her real name, by the way.
But it's her new code name.
No, code name Jody Michael. Cobretti! Sorry. Nobody ever watched Cobra with Sylvester Stallone? The movie's named Cobra, but his real name's Cobretti. Come on. Who the heck's who's named Cobretti? Anyway, that it'll be fun. Fun for all. We've got some emails. A bunch of you guys are heading up there. We'll have a blast. So what we're going to do the next day, we're going to go fishing. You guys have heard this. If you haven't heard it yet, let us know. Come out to the Muskie Shop Bash. Get with me and Jay. We're going to get out in the water and have some fun the next day. You know, maybe break out a video camera for the secret project. It will be a hoot.
Take as many people as we can out fishing if they want to go, and throw some baits and try to catch some fish.
Throw some bites. I'm excited. I'll be honest with you. Now, I don't like the Smitty guys. They're awful people.
Mean as a snake.
They're just awful. The meanest people in the North Woods are the Smitties. I know Jake listens.
Jake's listening right now, just shaking his head.
Like,
shaking his head, one ear to the other.
Super stoked they're going to be there.
Yeah.
Which, it's just like, you know, you talk about if anyone ever started a musky business, that would be it. It's like, how many 50 some years? It's crazy. It's like they've been in the Muskie forever. Smitty's in the friggin' Hall of Fame. He's a legend. Jake's taking the thing over. They're both phenomenal fishermen, and if you're a North Woods person, you're going to want to hear them. You know what I'm saying? You're going to want to hear what they got to say. And that parlays into this. Do you want time? It's time for Jake.
I think I know.
I think it's time for Dogs. It's an old-fashioned possum hunt.
It's a possum hunt, baby.
It's a possum hunt, baby.
It's a possum hunt.
For, guess what? All right. We're going to give away a Smitty grapple. This thing is freaking awesome. Okay.
Newest thing they have designed. It just came out. It's a flap tail with a really neat twist on everything, and water tested in some pool in the great area of Minocqua, because last week everything was frozen.
Totally not water tested at the waters of Minocqua.
It's the chlorine filled water.
The healing powers of the water. Dude, that's it.
The chlorine gives it extra buoyancy, I tell you.
It's like in Purple Rain, where he's like, the healing powers of Lake Minnetonka. No, it is healing powers of the waters of Minocqua, is what it is.
Yeah.
These are super cool. If you are a flap-tail aficionado, the Smitties have been making flap-tails before muskies were invented. long before muskies evolved from pike or whatever.
Yeah, they're the kings of surface baits, no doubt about it.
With that, and these are super cool.
Forever, every type.
You got
Let's do that. Let's do a great possum hunt. Let's bury a good old possum picture in the website at muskyshop.com, and the winner gets a Smitty grapple tail flaptail.
From the meanest guys in Minocqua, the Smitties. You can win.
That's sarcasm, by the way.
I'm teasing. I love those guys. They're phenomenal. I'm a huge, huge fan. They actually, Jay, you know what was awesome?
What?
They sent me for Christmas 2 possum colored flaptails.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
One of my favorite things. I got a handwritten note from Smitty hanging on the wall back here in the bait cave. I love it. Guys, these are super cool baits. Like I said, the OG, the original flaptail game, is a Smitty bait. They've gone over the top with these. Actually, really cool paint jobs, all that stuff. If you want to win one, if you want to catch them topwater fished, get on there and find that possum. Jay's going to bury that possum deep. Jay, listen to me now. Bury that possum deep.
Okay, it's going to be tougher than the last one. The last one, we gave everyone a break, you know, a little bit on the easy side. This time, as soon as we get off the phone, I'm going to find my favorite possum image, and I'm going to put that bad boy in there somewhere. I don't know yet.
Bury that possum deep, son.
Might be with the rods. I kind of doubt it, though.
Remember that time me and you played that old game of hide the possum?
I've heard some comments on YouTube videos about that. Funny, but kind of sad.
Kind of sad. Don't me and Jay don't play hide the possum. Anyway, find that possum, boys. Hey, I'll tell you this, though. We had a shield rod blessing. It was a magical experience.
Yeah, that's right. Last week was a shield rod blessing from Elmer.
It is
go
real.
Ahead, Steve, tell them what happened. Hey,
listen, a bunch of people bought shield rods. I sent out a bunch of shield rod blessings. It is magnificent. Only if you bought a shield rod could you see the legit shield rod blessing given by Elmer. It was a moving and profound experience, is what most people said.
I went with the dramatic lighting, but, you know.
One guy said he wept uncontrollably.
He did?
He just wept uncontrollably. It was a profound religious experience of the Elmer Jensen shield rod blessing. By the way, though, Elmer will be doing in-person shield rod blessings at the Muskie Shop Bash.
Yes. Yes, he will.
If you buy a shield rod, Elmer will bless it right there in between stare-off contests.
It doesn't hurt, you know?
It can only help coming from Elmer.
You could get when you buy a new rod.
Now, I was just going to say, he's a Northwoods legend. It can't hurt. It's Elmer Jensen. If Wild Bill was at work that day, he might hiss at you, though. Don't confuse the two. They don't call him Wild Bill for anything. He bites. Make sure it's Elmer. Ask for your shield rod blessing. Elmer might even be signing shield rods. You never know.
He's famous.
But anyway, Jack, I message you. Congratulations. I'm going to send you some baits. He did receive, and a lot of people have received the shield rod blessing. Going on to this week, if you buy a shield rod and send me the message, show me you bought one, I will share the Elmer Jensen shield rod blessing. The Elmer Jensen shield rod blessing comes with a 50-inch guarantee, I've heard.
Yes. Yes, it does. It's free shipping on these shield rods, folks, so great time to pick one up.
Wow. They're hot. Hot. Jay, time. It's happening. Musky season is right around the corner for some of us, and it's already begun for some of us as well.
Well, you had a pretty good day. An unusual day judging from the weather.
Oh, unusual.
Just tell them.
I watched the temperature go from 72 degrees down to the low 40s in the span of 3 hours. And the water temps
cold front hard. And it was raining like crazy again.
Raining, so the cats.
Yeah.
Just nightmare scenario. We put a Mondo Hondo in the boat. Just a stud of a fish on a secret. Dare I say it? This is the first time I'll mention it. There is a secret Livingston lure project.
Yep.
That's all I can say. Right? If you don't know Livingston lures, buy a headhunter. Buy Walking Boss. Buy Walking Boss 2. Get you a bulldozer. But there's something around the corner that is going to rock your socks. And, it put some 5-0 in the boat today in like the nastiest conditions you could imagine.
That is so huge. That's so I mean, the timing is so cool because
Jay's
I
thrown
mean,
it.
This bait, yeah, I've thrown it.
It's the easiest bait on
pool,
earth.
But, hey,
at the waters of Minocquas.
Wintertime blues.
Listen, if you come to the Muskie Shop Bash and stay at the waters of Minocqua, I can promise you we will do something ridiculous at the waters of Minocqua with you. I don't know what it is. We might, you know, we might have a good old-fashioned muskie baptism there in the waters of Minocqua.
So, you put Steve together with a water park, I mean, good things are going to happen.
Jail time.
Probably.
It's probably. just straight up. Let's call it like we see them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ain't lived till you've been drug out in handcuffs at the waters of Minocqua. Anyway, the thing is this, and we've talked Livingston. I do want to throw this out here. We're going to get there in a minute, but everybody's like, because of the new kids on the block, right? Not the band, but still newer. About what some of the killer baits are. I'm going to say this. And I want to talk about it in a minute again. But get a headhunter. Get a headhunter. The other thing is, what about the EBS? Does the bleep, bloop, blop, 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 does it do anything? I'm going to throw this out there.
Some people are kind of on the fence with that deal.
It can't hurt. Do you know how loud the hooks are banging off of a bait?
Yeah, or something with rattles, especially a plastic bait with metal rattles in it. I mean, that's pretty unnatural sounding. And that brings me to a theory. The big ticket, Doug Smith at work, I don't know if I've ever told you this one. But I mean, and this is a pretty common theory, really. But, I mean, years ago he told me this, and, you know, I never thought of it that way. It's just neat perspective. He's kind of an anti-rattle guy.
Right.
Now, granted, he fishes a lot of gin clear water, deep, you know, Cisco-based lakes around up here in northern Wisconsin. But that being said, you know, rattles, he's like, big fish hears rattles. It's the most unnatural thing, you know, on earth, right? And he's like, yeah, you might catch small fish on it, but, you know, the motherlode type fish, the ones he's after are not into the clickety clack thing in that kind of environment. You know what I mean? You know, he's like, well, look at a bulldog or a Medusa. You know, there's nothing clacking on that.
No.
And in fact, there's hardly, you really don't think there's much vibration, but it's a natural, I mean, fish do the same thing, right? When there's, you know, like a, you know, a sucker or whatever. Uh-huh. Whatever forage is going through the water, it's, you know, it's just a natural movement. They're displacing water and they're putting out vibration. It's just a different type.
I will say this. I don't think, and I'm just, and I have nothing to back this up, right? Other than a quick Google search.
Cheater.
Hold on.
While you're doing that, so this EBS thing Steve was just bringing up there.
Yeah.
The EBS thing is electronic bait. Ooh, help me out here. Electronic bait sounds?
System.
Let me bring up the old site here.
But here's what I was getting at. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fish do not hear the same way that we hear. They
Well,
have
no
their
doubt.
Lateral line, and they have vibrations in their ear stones, right? Otoliths, by the way. But, you know, it's a matter of sensing vibration and noise in the water. To me, the EBS and the sound stuff on those baits is more vibration. More noise, more racket. But that would be conducive to calling in fish. I again, you know, people are asking about the Livingston again. I've caught some monsters on the headhunter. I just have accessory. We did that podcast with Herbeck. The Dirty Dancer, the Magnum Headhunter, the Jerk Master, which you guys can't even keep in stock because that thing is bad to the bone.
Yeah, I don't even know if we have any right now. Yeah, it's crazy.
Keep an eye out.
The Rachel.
It's just solid.
It's a deep diver.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff on the Livingston line of stuff is sort of like a greatest hits. They've taken classic designs and made them better. And so the question, like I said, the quick question becomes the EBS. I'll say it. If you hate the EBS, right? It's two pins.
Mm-hmm.
You can cover one of the pins and it won't make a sound.
So, you're not going to hate it. It's very subtle. It's subtle. It's kind of a vibration ticking kind of, yeah. I mean, they sampled, live bait fish sounds and put it into a digital, transmission of some sort. So,
well, it's basically through a, like a PZO style speaker kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just vibrating and making the sound. So that's the trick. If you want them silent, that's a little hack, by the way. They use two pins on the top that are bridged together by the water. And if you need one silent, just a little dab of glue over top of that will silence that bait. I don't think it matters. If you've ever, remember back in the day, didn't you guys record a video one time using a hydrophone? I'm talking years back. Somebody did it. Whereas like baits underwater, rattles versus no rattles. Everything is super loud because when those hooks are clanking, if you're like been swimming and it's just like you bang two rocks into the water, it's deafening. It's so I think more sound the better. Anyway, that's just to talk about the EBS there on the Livingston. Don't forget them surly guys over at Smitty were giving away a grapple. The Surly Smitties, that's it. We're giving away one of the Surly Smitties grapples on the possum hunt. Jay.
Yep.
Everybody's got to have a game plan. We were talking about it a minute ago. It is almost musky season, right?
Early season game plan.
You need an early season game plan. Yeah. So me and Jay, we enjoyed last week. So many people and loved our common mistakes. So I just want to talk to you for a little bit about your early season game plan. So, the first part of catching a muskie is finding a muskie, right?
Yeah.
I would think so. They're sort of hard to catch, whether or not.
Location.
So, I threw up on the front of the app the video I did and just put it back at the top about muskie map work to cover some of this if you need visual representation. Talking about raking down the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you guys are, the ice is off, it's early season, post-spawn, these fish are going to use those food shelves, those littoral zones, right? The areas that generally hold vegetation are going to be your prime concerns. This becomes a matter of map work, right? Let's say, in that video, I dissected a little bit of a place called Catfish Lake right in your backyard, right? Never been on it. Never been on it. I have had multiple people send me messages and go, wow, that's cool. I fished that. Those are new spots you pointed out, right?
Oh, cool.
And that video's been up for a while, but I thought I'd bear putting it back up. What we need to look for in the early season are shallow water zones, right?
Yeah.
So, the best thing to do is break your lake down ahead of time. Look at your map. Again, I swear by the Navionics website. You can do contour highlighting on their website. And that's one thing a lot of people will be like, ugh, I don't want to go out in the garage. It's cold, right? And play with my fish finder or look at it your phone. I use all the time Navionics, who makes great chips for your fish finders. They have a app on your phone, or you can look at their website. I do a lot of map work from a desktop or from my phone. That will allow you to sort of start looking at this place under highlights. That's a big thing in the early season. in the early season, I'm not really concerned with open water. I'm not concerned with too many of the deep structures, the deep breaks, right? I want to find those post-spawn fish that are in the shallows and are actively feeding, recuperating from the spawn, looking for those downsized presentations and all that stuff. We've talked about it before, and we're definitely having, you know, Joe is the granddaddy of all this, but I promise you when I have him on to do a season opener, do you know what he's going to say, Jay?
What?
Shallow water and the warmest you can find.
Yeah, warmest you can find. Yeah.
Always. Right?
Yep. We've heard that a lot. A lot of people are going to, you know, beat that to death. Mm-hmm. I mean, it almost sounds second nature. You know, but it's like, I don't know if everyone really thinks that way once they get out. I think they just start fishing and they're, you know, there's just the north side of the lake's going to warm faster because of sunlight penetration, you know.
Right.
If it's a decent sized lake, like mm-hmm. when you're looking at Catfish Lake, you know, were you looking at, I would assume, okay, you're looking for those zones you were talking about
mm-hmm.
off a northern area, so there would be like some adjacent flat that was at the right depth, not too shallow, you know, but there is vegetation nearby.
In some regard, like when I cut that video and we did it, it was more about just your map work, right, for mm-hmm, people mm-hmm. to understand those zones. But, you know, depend on that body of water. I'll tell you, if let's say that what day's muskie opener?
Northern Wisconsin's Memorial Day.
Right. Well, the day before that, I'd sure as heck get out there and drive around and check some temps.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would be doing. Right? You can't throw a bait at them, but I would sure as heck go out there and go, how warm is it here? Okay, so let's pretend we got a whatever lake it is, right? Lake, hey, I want to see your teepee. They name these lakes here, so we're mm-hmm. gonna troll around lake. I want to see your teepee, and we're gonna check all the edges, and I'm gonna go, heck, it's warm over here. What's it doing now? Do your homework ahead of time. You know, you can find, you always hear that north end of the lake or this end of the lake. Every body of water is a little bit different depending on where channels, tributaries, creeks come into these things. Go out there, scan the lake the day before.
Yeah, good point.
Right.
You know, and everyone's going to have the opportunity to do that this year. When I say everyone, mm-hmm. I mean like upper Midwest, because I'm sure you're aware of this. We are going to have an early ice out.
Right.
And some of these lakes are already ice free. And it is not even, what is it, last day of March today?
Yeah.
So it'll be well over 2 weeks ahead of normal. And that's like the first time in a while. We've had so many years in the last 5 years where it's been a late ice out, mm-hmm. and that usually doesn't turn into a great setup for the lakes around here. You know, I think the weeds don't grow right. You know, different weird things right. happen, like night fishing bite never develops. But, hey, I'm just pumped. I'm fired up because when we have an early ice out, even if it's a week early, and I think it's going to be two and a half weeks early this year, it's going to be a good season.
If you can get on the water, you know, that preseason stuff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a good way to find muskies is throwing a safety pin spinner bait on bass mm-hmm. tackle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can't bite through those. You know, I mean, I'm from the land of no close season. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And so
I'm the opposite.
Right. If I were on open water and I couldn't fish muskies, I would throw a safety pin spinnerbait because it is a piece of wire with its own built-in leader, if you will. They can't chomp off. Before opener, I'd sure as heck be throwing them for bass.
Mm-hmm.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know.
Well, we've got a catch and release bass season. For the first time, I think, ever right now. So as soon as ice goes out on your lake around here, you know, or,
scout.
Yeah, I mean, go out and start scouting. That's a great plan. It's something
fishing.
To do.
Yep.
We got some really nice weather coming this weekend.
Well, let me ask you
this. Might even be warmer than Tennessee.
And like I'm saying, I'm not advocating, target them, but I would be fishing those zones, throwing stuff that can handle a fish. What's the stance on pike?
What is it?
Yeah, like season, like water's open, pike fishing? I've always wondered that because, like,
you cannot musky fish in any way, shape,
or form. No, that's what I'm saying.
When season is close,
I understand.
When it's close. So, yeah, I mean, if a warden deems that you are
musky fishing,
targeting them,
right?
You know, even though you're quote unquote pike fishing, you know, you could get fined.
Right.
It's his judgment call.
Is there any season on pike? Is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, that's like first weekend of May that would open.
Is it when that opens up when you can throw? Okay, I was just wondering because you always hear, I'll hear stories from Canada. What I'm getting is this is. Like, you'll hear guys that'll go up to Canada pike fishing and they'll just
nail some
gondo post spawn fish that's just eaten up. And you're like, ugh. And, you know, it's one of those weird things. The reason I ask you that is because there's really not a clear line between pike fishing and musky fishing aside from a figure eight. You know, that's why I was asking that. And I'm not advocating doing that. What I'm saying, if I had open water, I would be throwing a spinner bait. And you know, you might see a fish. Don't figure eight before season opens.
No,
absolutely not. But
yeah, get dialed in on your location. Yeah, I mean, that's
do
cool.
Your scouting.
Cool thing to do.
You know, I mean, you know, again, this is somebody that has never dealt with close seasons. If you catch one, what do you just do? Turn it loose out of the net? How's that work?
Yeah, you got to release it immediately.
Gotcha.
And then if you continue fishing this, you know, the same bait in the same same area, you be in trouble.
Right. Here's my monster Medusa for largemouth.
Yeah. So don't cheat. Cheat, not good.
Cheat. Yeah. We're not advocating that. I'm actually being educated as we go here because, you know, it's you get past the hillbilly line here. There's no rules, baby.
All the creakers.
We call them creakers. You creakers know what I'm talking about. What's a season, you West Virginia hillbillies? You know what? Musky season's whenever I can get on the boat, boys.
Season? What are you talking about?
It reminds me of that Pace Picante. Remember that? New York City.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, musky season. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, Wisconsin's unique in some aspects, I guess. One way of looking at it.
Cheese and obesity.
Lots of cheese.
Anyway, don't take me wrong, folks. Anybody that's listening, what I'm saying is I would be scouting locations, and if you're bass fishing and you see a toothy critter, follow your regulations. So,
yeah,
look those locations over. I would 100% pre-scout. All right, so we're going to pre-scout by throwing baits. The other thing is this, out there bass fishing before the season opens with that open ice out or early ice out, you're going to already see where bait is. Right? So you're going to see where the forage is, you know, your panfish, your perch, your minnows, or where they are at. They're going to be in those shallow zones. Drive your boat around. Find that warmer water. These fish are always going to seek that in the early part of the year. And again, I'm going to reiterate this point. And I've had a lot of emails about this. Well, I check the north end of my lake, but it's cooler, right? And you always hear that, Jay. North end.
Yeah, right.
I've asked guys, what lake are you on? Right? And you guys are so secretive. They're like, well, I can't tell you. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to tell anybody. What lake are you on? And then I'll look it up. I'll pull it up on the map. And on the north end of this thing, there's like a giant creek blowing into it.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah, that's going to have a little bit of impact.
Right. If you're on a body of water like that or intending to fish a body of water where those typical zones are actually influenced by water influx, pre-scout, bass fish. Get out there and check that out. The other thing is this, you hit on it earlier, Jay. Weather is awful sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here, I have chap lips. My face is red from wind burn. I'm not kidding. It's like I look sunburnt from today, you know? And nothing hurts in the beginning of a season like a cold front or bad weather, right?
Nothing hurts
like that. I'm saying hurts the bite. I'm not saying hurts me. Everybody hurts sometimes.
Don't go there.
I'm sorry.
No.
we're gonna show our, we're not trying to show our 90s here on the podcast. dude, that's the next video, Jack.
Yeah, could be.
All right, I can't tell everybody else. Me and Jay know what I'm talking about. The video you're filming now, right?
Yeah.
The next one is just that, but it's just guys getting out of the boat and walking off sadly into the water because they lost one. anyway, weather can hurt you bad.
Right? Weather can hurt you. Yeah, that's what you said. Okay, so what do you mean hurt?
Hurt
physically?
Your bite,
you're just talking about it's just going to destroy the bite.
Well, no, Jay. I'm talking about weather's going to hurt your feelings because it's mean and it has a personality. Weather.
Well, you said your lips were chapped. I thought maybe you had an owie or something.
Me have owie. yes, folks. I gotta take the rest of the night off because I got a big owie. I hate you.
I tell you, he's hardcore.
He's hardcore, folks.
He's a guy to the bone.
He got a splinter. Oh, guys, it's blowing over 5 miles an hour. We got to go in. Right.
Yeah, weather. Yeah, absolutely.
Weather will hurt
your
bike.
You got the hardest cold front, in the last month coming down.
Ever.
It's like, that's a powerful pressurized. It's doing something to some fish out there.
We'll know when the weatherman comes in here.
He's gonna lay it down.
Kind of straighten us out. But what I'm getting at is this, and regardless of how I say it, in the early part of your season, weather can decide everything. It can hurt your bite. It can help your bite. You've got to read and assess what's going on climactically, right? So let's say the season's going to open up for you, all right? And we're already in a cold front, right? You've got to understand that those fish will drop out of those littoral zones into that first break and sort of hold off, right? We don't know what the weather's going to be like on Memorial Day and all this fun stuff. But you've got to be prepared for that and reading that weather pattern in advance, right? So if you're one of the musky anglers that you're not even going to go out on the boat until it's musky time, be watching those weather patterns, be prepared for it, because it can have a far more dramatic effect is what I'm getting at. In the early part of the season, bad cold fronts, bad weather systems, bad weather patterns are highly, highly impactful.
Yeah, yeah.
Far more than they are in the summer. I can always, listen, in a cold front in the middle of summer, I can always find a dingbat.
The water's super hot sometimes, right? The water dropping a couple degrees isn't that bad a deal,
right? Give me old 35 inch crazy Larry, I'll catch him. Some mad male that'll hit about anything. The pressure's changing, it's high bright blue skies, find me a stupid fish, I can catch him.
Yeah.
That early part of the season, though, you need to be watching that and reading that. Obviously, next week, we're going to have the meteorologist on here, and we'll cover it more heavily. But what I'm telling you is, when I'm gearing up, when it's getting into that time to be musky fishing, be watching your weather patterns and understand, do I have stability? Do I have instability before I make my first cast? Muskies crave stability, right? As an apex predator, they crave stability. The reason they crave stability is because a stable body of water will dictate where their prey is. Okay? It's one of these things. A lot of you guys are deer hunters or archers or blah, 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 blah. If you're a hunter, you set up shooting lanes, right? You anticipate your prey will be coming from a certain direction or in a certain angle or into a certain place. Muskies are doing the same thing, right? They're using the water conditions, the movement of forage to dictate where they're going to be, because they go, I've got a shooting lane here, food's going to show up, right? When the bait fish are out of whack, the muskies are out of whack because their predation plan is gone, right? Muskies are counting on all the bait fish, all the forage movements to dictate where they're going to be, because that is their skill set. So anticipate, based upon the upcoming weather and water conditions, where those fish will be. If it's been cold front, cold front, cold front, cold front, muskie opener, right? Guess what they're going to be? They're not going to be up with their tails up on the shore, right? think ahead. Be watching the weather. Be watching the water in advance. Again, we talked about temperature, Jay. I think that is, of anything when it comes to season opener, the most important factor. Eh?
Yeah. Probably, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying.
And if there's one time of the year we're having that kind of high pressure, you know, almost like a north wind kind of deal, where as long as the temperature is not dropping, you know, around up here, you know, opening, you know, I mean, the water's going to be in the 50s, you know, right, roughly or whatever, you know. So, I mean, you got a 60 degree day, which might be a little cooler than the previous days, right, but the sun's beating down. Might not be bad.
Right. What we're getting at is this. If you haven't noticed the common theme, getting the warmest water you can on season opener. I mean, it's basic, Jay. It's so basic. I mean, you know, we try to wax eloquent about some of this stuff, but the warmer the water, the higher their metabolism is, the more apt they are to feed, the more active they are.
Yeah, because that's where those panfish are. I mean, Joe's said that so many times in so many different ways, too, and described it in different ways.
Trying to
of searching for that warmer water and and looking for active. You're going to see if bluegills are schooled up, yeah, and if something's schooling them up, you know, you're going to see something break the water unless it's a windy day, you know, and you're probably up in shallow water.
Yeah,
it's cool. Cool time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is that is the basics of it. Getting the warmer stuff, get where the forage is. The other thing I'll say is this. When you're in the 50s, slow down.
Slow down.
We've laughed about it. Don't be a Johnny boy. Don't break out the 12s.
Yeah, no need to be burning bucktails.
Right.
Not that you can't catch a fish on an Epps 5 or something downsized, but right, and you probably will. But, I mean, I certainly like erratic baits, you know, the first couple weeks of season, jerk baits.
Yeah, and the thing is this, the next thing is always gear. Everybody's asking already. And like I said, we're covering all these topics because everybody's already emailing. We're trying to get as many as we can. Where, when, how? What do I need? That's the time. Okay, one thing I'll say is this, and I'm going to hit you with another shield rod thing, folks. This is when I'm breaking out that 8-foot shield rod spinning rod.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you go, why? Why are you talking about a spinning rod? Husky jerks.
Throwing those finesse smaller baits.
Are so easy on spinning rods, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right? This is when I'm thinking, downsize, downsize, downsize. You know, you can get easily, you can grab a spinning rod, right? And then you've got all the little spinning reels. Heck, you know, there's that Akuma, they've got the Shadow Stalker spinning combo, right? All these little downsize combinations of spinning rods. For some reason, those little bass baits love spinning rods. You can work them really well. They handle it. They can handle the fish. Be thinking about appropriate tackle if you're going to throw really downsized stuff. Like I said, I prefer, to be honest with you, if I went through rattle traps, early season baits on a spinning rod. Okay? Not a popular opinion, but it's the truth. You know? It's what sure, I prefer. Yeah. You know, I can't throw a spinning
rod. Oh, musky spinning rod. You're talking about musky.
I'm talking about the 8-foot shield rod spinning. You know, pair that up with some 55-pound braid and you're in the game.
Yeah.
You know, the old adage of downsize, downsize, downsize is very true that time of year. If you're going to throw your combos or you're going to throw your typical musky gear, that is time to spool it up with that 55-pound. Just for casting distance with those small baits. You know, I mean, it's worth noting that you need to downsize the tackle, downsize the rod, downsize the reel, and slow down a bit because that early season, yes, everyone wants to burn baits and find that hot fish. There's a lot of negative and neutral fish that are up shallow during that time of year. And we're sort of doubling back on it, but the reason we were talking about giving away the Smitty grapple for the possum hunt, that bait is devastating early in the year. You want to run a bait that's going to pull fish out of shallows or those Smitty flaptails? Slow, 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 slow. And if you think you're going slow, go slower. And those fish, they're not going to come up and blast it. It's not like they're knocking a weagle out of the water. They're going to come up and take it. That's it. And that's why, like I said, I'm excited about that Smitty grapple, because it's got the spreaders on it and everything. And I've been using the Smitty flap tails for that for a long time. Just as slow as you can go, you know, over these flats, over sand, over shallow rocks, over old weeds, slowing it down. Again, if you're going for the setup, the quintessential, you know, post-spawn season emmer setup, have a spinning rod or a medium action rod on the boat, just so you can wing those small things with ease. You know, you guys will hear me all year long, well, you say you fish one rod. I can, but it's a lot easier with the spinning gear, you know, or the downsize stuff. Just give it a go. What else would there be, you know, other than the gear? What are some of the baits, Jay? Like, so many people are asking about this. Let's go through quickly here. Bucktails, okay? That time of year. Spanky bait, firefly.
Yeah, right? That little firefly. What is it? Firefly 8, I think? Small one?
Well, it's got mag 7s, right, on the firefly. Downsized little bait, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. MEPS number 5.
MEP, I mean, that's...
Yeah, they're like 650. I mean, that is...
Yeah, 650, yeah.
And
yeah.
Speaking of, yeah, and if you're going out to Steve's Secret Lake over there, Catfish Lake over on the Eagle River Chain. Eagle River Chain, for whatever reason...
Don't tell anybody about Eagle River Chain. Nobody knows there's fish there.
MEPS number 5.
Secret. MEPS number 5.
It's a secret lake. They work year-round there, and they catch... Some of the biggest fish in the tournaments, you know, all those upper 40s sometimes come on these tiny bucktails.
That and the RJs.
And that's something perfect for spinning tackle.
Oh, yeah.
It's only a half ounce bait.
Right.
And yeah, the little baby RJ.
Oh, yeah.
Little ghost tail number 8.
Mm-hmm.
It's called model number 8. That's a tiny little, yeah.
That's one of those deals of Hirsch's. It's, if you guys have been doing this for the last few years, you don't know nothing about Hirsch's ghost tails. Right? I know it sounds like an old timer, but man, it's one of those baits that for some reason they work. And you just nailed it. The Hirsch's Ghost Tail number 8, ridiculous. Booker 500 series.
The 500 series, yeah.
The Shumway Hothead.
Air, tinsel, or hybrid.
Doesn't matter.
Lots of options there.
Loving the RJs. You know, if you're new to the game, don't be afraid of that mini trilogy.
Yeah, the mini trilogy, right.
You know?
Right.
That's one of those things where you go, wow.
That has it's a bladeless bucktail. It doesn't have a blade. It's got a center tri-winged thing on there that spins and keeps on spinning.
Those would be the
That's a cool bait.
And so the other thing, sorry, Jay, I apologize. But everybody's asking, like I said, we're trying to cover it. What blades do I throw? What cranks do I throw? Blah, 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 blah. And we're going to run them down. Which is, I'm on the cranks right now.
Crankbaits.
The baby Cisco Kids. Bill Lewis Mag Force Rattle Traps have caught more muskies than you can shake a stick at. That is a killer rattle trap. That is just, you can't go wrong. And then again, Jay, how many F-18 floaters have caught muskies?
Yeah, that's a good one. That is a good one.
And
if you're a Rapala Husky Jerk fan, try the F-18.
Dude, it's one of those.
That is a great river stick, too.
It is.
It's a little shallow diving. It's like the original Rapala, but it's, I don't know, 6 inches long.
It's one of those things.
Maybe 6.5. It's a bigger one, yeah.
They're nearly forgotten by time now. You know what I'm saying? It's just like Rapala is not the cool bait.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. We've caught so many muskies on F-18s. I mean, the same thing as Bagley. Monster sheds. I can't tell you how many fish I've caught on monster sheds. Yes, it's a wooden bait. Yes, it'll blow up. Yes, they catch fish. But, you know, the Bill Lewis Magforce, Rapala F-18s. I'm looking else here.
Big fork twitch darters. Yeah. 6-inch twitch darter.
Yeah, that and the 5-inch slammer. Just killer.
5-inch. 5-inch has a square lip. Great, great hard wobble to it. Yeah, it's a good one too.
Just a killer wobble. Again, you know, and that is like this quintessential early spring crankbaits, you know, the JB Rattler, the Bill Lewis Super Trap, you know, those are all baits that are going to be good. The other thing is this, a lot of people are like, well, what do I do if they're off the break? 4-inch belly, or four-inch deep shad from Slammer. That thing is bad, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're talking, if you want to get down, if you mm-hmm. want the bait to run 6 to 8 feet.
Right. The other thing with this, if you think they're holding tight to the bottom, banging that thing through the mud or off those flats too. That little 4-inch Slammer deep shad, it doesn't have to be run deep. Make contact, let it float up. Make contact, let it float up. Make contact, let it float up, right? Those are all really good options. The next thing people ask about is jerk baits. Well, let me tell mm-hmm. you. There's a little secret in the Livingston camp, but we can't go there yet.
No, not yet.
I like, obviously, and this is the dumbest statement ever, Phantoms, right?
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with a Phantom.
6-inch Phantom.
Yep.
Or go with a little 4.
The 4 is a little tricky. You better have your spinning rod or some 55 to really get a good action on the 4.
Yep. You got to use real light tackle for that tackle. One. But the 6-inch, yeah, you can run that with anything. And it's not that oversized that you couldn't run that, you know, opening right. season up here.
Often overlooked is the Rapala X-Rap Subwalk.
Uh-huh.
Which is a great little bait. It's got a little, it's not as... You know, Rapala makes baits for everything. You know what I'm saying? But that bait, it's not as pronounced, but man, it's got a good action. I like that bait a little bit. The Weston Glide bait, there's a little swim glide bait they make, which is good. And again, whether we're talking walk the dog or jerk baits, again, Micro Medusa needs to be in your tackle box. What are they, 2-packs, Jay? The little guys?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's 2 to a pack. Yeah, I mean, nothing against soft plastics. I mean, the one thing you didn't touch on is mm-hmm. Dive Rise. And, I mean, this is a little bit larger than everything else you're talking about. But I like 9-inch Suex, weighted ones,
9-inch,
slower rise, yeah. Just a Dive Rise, nice erratic presentation, stop and go.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing, you say that, though, I've caught a lot of fish on that Smitty Tracer tail.
Yeah, a Smitty jerkbait. Mm-hmm. God, there's so many. There's so many good ones.
But, you know, we're trying to hit the highlights here.
Keep it small, keep it mm-hmm. slower, and if you can, keep it erratic, and you'll probably contact some fish.
The other thing I'd throw at this is don't discount trolling. Like, if it's early season and I'm throwing and nothing's happening, right, don't be afraid to spend that middle part of the day and get on that first break and drag some small minnow baits. That 5-inch Slammer is devastating at small speeds or slow speeds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, drag some baits around. Don't be scared to do it. Jay, I think we've covered a lot of it to get people going for the season opener. Obviously, we're going to hit some more stuff. We'll get Boog Daddy and Pete Main and some other people to chime in. But that is the basics. That is a basic season starter, season opener game plan. Jay, it's time for a little Q&A. What do you think?
Q&A.
Q&A. First up, David. Ordered the 9-foot heavy shield rod. 2 days later, it showed up. He said, can't wait to get on the rivers of Virginia and for a trip up north. Had to ship it to my work apartment so my fiance would still marry me. Congratulations, David. I didn't read that, but way to hide it from her. Congratulations.
Way of being secretive.
Right. If you get caught with it, you can tell her that you want it, and I will send you an email to back that up to keep you out of the trouble. William says, I know you guys were talking about reels in the last podcast, but I heard if you had a shield rod blessing, you didn't even need to make a cast. 50 inches would just swim into the net. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, he said, will you please do a thumbnail of the podcast with Elmer's face on a Thundercat holding a shield rod? Wow.
Ooh,
we'll try.
Holy cow.
You know, that's a lot of Photoshop and requests, but I'll do my best. Sean, fellas, love the pod kitten. Wow. Makes the winter months up north go by and more tolerable. Keep it up. Wonder if you ever use shorter rods for walk the dog topwater baits. I've converted to longer rods and carrying a couple 9-foot shield rods, but I struggle a bit with gliders and I'm horrible with walk the dog style baits. Do I just suck or should I use shorter rods for walking the dog? Meow. Meow, Jay. Wow.
Meow. Yeah, use a shorter rod. I know you don't.
I disagree.
Well, we don't know how tall he is,
mm-hmm.
but we don't know what kind of, boat positioning, it's like if you're in one of those, Lund style deep V's and you're fishing up front, you're like 18 feet above the water.
Right.
Yeah. You can get by with a long, nice, nine and a half foot rod, but,
kick that thing over to the side.
You're fishing out of a John boat and you're 5'8".
Yeah.
Get a shorter rod. Yeah. You want that thing to be, you want to be able to point that thing down and work the bait, not have it pointed horizontally working the bait. You know what I mean?
Listen, if anybody needs a 6-foot St. Croix Premier, I'm your guy. Call me.
I have
piles of them from the 70s and 80s and 90s here at the house.
Have their place for that. Exactly. I think
that's the thing is like, let's say a jackpot, right?
Yeah.
That bait was designed when the premier rod, the baddest of bad, was 6'6".
Yeah. And the longest one they had was a 7-footer and it was a medium heavy. It was a light bucktail rod.
Yep.
And Mesa Comer preferred the 6-footer, Bob Mesa Comer.
Right.
Yeah. Back in the day when that thing was coming out and all the hype.
Bob Mesa Comer, one of the nicest guys in muskie fishing. So. Adored by all. Anyway, that rod was short. It was just, it was a pull cue. And that's what you got to think about the time of this. I had a discussion with a client about reef hogs, right? Same mm-hmm. deal. Reef hogs were on this short little pull cue rod. You know, that was Tom Food Alley, I think, that made those. Suix. Yeah. All these baits, they came from pull cues, short rods. The way I work 9 foot, 9'6", is that rod is like sticking over to the side quite a bit at an angle. You might need, depending, like you said, Jay, on your height. It's just part of the game. There's the one piece 8-foot shield rods, right? That'll get you going. I mean, if you need a shorter rod, it just depends on your body language.
Yeah, and if the rod's too light and it's loading a little bit when you're working a bait,
mm-hmm.
you don't want that to happen. You know, you don't want that sag in the rod tip
right
when you're working a bait. Like, when those double cowgirls came out a while back, there is St. Croix redesigned their rods around one bait.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... It's a pretty remarkable statement, but it's true.
It's true.
They said, okay, the double cowgirl weighs 2.9-3 ounces, right around there, right?
Right.
So everyone's like, well, a 1-3 ounce rod will handle that perfectly. Not the case.
Right.
So they came out with the sling blade, which was designed for double tens, and mm-hmm. then added 2-6 ounce. So that weight of that bait is right in the middle of the range. It's just like, the rod will still load a little bit to cast it properly, but it'll be stiff enough so that when you're working that bait and you got to snap it and drive it, it's still stout. You can still mm-hmm. control it that way. So that's my 2 cents.
That's the thing. If you're struggling with topwater walk the dogs, I would bet it's a struggle as well with side-to-side glides, right? Similar action. Yeah. You know, again, it is about finding a rod that fits your body. If you're 5'1" or you're 6'3" or you're 7'2", it's all going to be different, right? And so finding that right fit, I'm able to get it at my size. I'm able to do jackpots with a 9'6", excuse me. Would I say that jackpots were easier on a 6'6" rod? Probably. I mean, I don't even like, the Dancing Raider, Jay?
Yeah.
I have a 7-foot Premier Heavy that I do take to Canada to work Dancing Raiders on.
Well, you've got a special technique with that that I don't think you can repeat in public. Because
no, not at all. It's
too controversial.
It's too good. Yeah,
it's too special.
It's too special. But again, I throw jackpots on it. It is a little bit easier. You can do it on the 9 foot 9'6"s. You just find the right setup. Jay, I'm just curious now. I'm just running my mouth. Does anybody make a sub 7 foot rod anymore? I don't think it exists.
You know, I don't think so. I think they're completely St. Croix's got a 6'10". Ooh. Couple 6'10"s, yeah, so there are.
Look at that.
I don't think any of the smaller brands, the smaller musky brands, you know, like Daiwa, Shimano, that don't make as many models, I don't think they run anything under, 7.5.
Right. Well,
yeah, it's times have changed.
Yeah, you can get it done with a 7.5 rod angle. That's the thing. If you want to do it all in one rod, change your rod angle, cock that rod off to the side, and you can get it going that way. Robert says, I really enjoy the podcast. I've been fishing muskies for over 40 years. I fish creeks in West Virginia. That makes him what, Jay?
Creeker.
You're a creeker, Robert. In 2020.
Congratulations, Robert.
Congratulations, you creeker. In 2020, I saw something new. I'd fish through a 100-yard stretch of the creek. I'd hear or see a muskie jump maybe 50 yards behind me where I just fished. Go back with the same lure to where it jumped and catch it within 1 to 3 cast. It happened several times. Questions. Why'd they not bite when I first fished the spot the first few minutes earlier? Right? Why are they jumping this time of year? I've seen plenty of muskies porpoising, but never had much luck with those. This is very different. The musky body of water, you know, the musky's body is leaving the water, fully emerging. This happened in July through September. What are your thoughts?
Did he say he went back with a different lure? Did he say he went back with the same lure?
I'd hear the musky jump behind me. I'd go back with the same lure, he said.
Okay, interesting.
What you need, sir, is a little bastard from Lake X.
Thank That's you. A topwater bait.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you're a West Virginia creeker and you're not throwing the little bastards, let me know.
I could really see that working in that situation too.
That is shallow water. It's narrow water. You know, we're notorious in that glides, cranks, right? A lot of cranes. A lot of custom little gliders and stuff of that nature going through there. Don't be afraid to throw topwater through that. One thing I'll tell you is this. When I'm creaking, because I'm a creaker, Jay. Right? First pass through, right? Let's say a lot of people, I got to explain it to you northern listeners. This is taking a John boat, lowering it down a hill with a piece of rope, and then crawling down the hill with a gas tank, then crawling back up to get a 5-horsepower motor, then crawling back down, then crawling up and getting your gear. It is, we're talking creaking. Do you know why, Jay? Because
he's creaking. Well, you're creaking. He's creaking with a boat, or is he creaking shore fishing? Because that sounds like fun.
He's creaking with a boat.
With a boat, okay.
Right.
I bet some of those creeks are so wild you can't even shore fish them.
No,
you know?
It's you can't. There's places.
Okay.
I promise you, next year, post pandemic, me and you're gonna go creaking. How's that sound?
Yeah,
we will go to West. By God, and go creaking. I might even call Cody Doan. You said it far too slow. What's his name?
I can't say it like
Cody
you can.
Doan. Anyway. We might go creaking. When you're creaking, what I like to do is I will break it down in sections, whether it be bend to bend, curve to curve, right? There's times that I'll go, okay, this lay down to that lay down. I force myself to fish it on a couple passes because it's moving a lot of times. If you're fishing by yourself, I will go, most of the time my move is top water, and I'm talking summer, top water pass, go back, do a crankbait pass, right? On those prime stretches. July through September, man, I'd have a little top water going. Little bastard's my go-to. Such a great bait. Such a great bait. You know, this is muddy, stained water. I love that bone color Lake X makes. I like the black and orange or the perch. Try that. If these fish are up that high, they're rolling, they're porpoising, and they're coming out of the water, they are shallow. Don't be afraid to throw top water on the creek. Right? Yeah. The other thing is this. If you're working cranes, I'd assume if you're a West Virginia boy, you're a crane baiter like I am. If you're a creeker, you got to be. You know, let that thing go down and up, down and up. Sort of that pseudo dive and rise. A lot of these situations, it's too shallow or it's too gnarly for us to fish a suic or a smitty. Use that crankbait like a jerkbait. Down up, down up, down up, down up.
Down up. Let it break the water when it comes up. Yeah,
that back out. I can't tell you how many fish I've caught creaking. Crawling that thing just next to timber. Sometimes, like you said, though, man, why they're doing it, I don't know, because muskies are crazy. You know, you might go back on. They've given their location up. They might be blasting small little bait fish, and they're eating a few of them at a go, and you're catching them because of that. Mm-hmm. What I would do, and what we've always done when I'm creaking, break it down in small sections, repeat, right? You know, like I said, on moving water, it's tough. If you don't have a boat partner, you're going to fish less water, but you're going to be more thorough. Do one pass doing one thing, come back around, start at the same place, do it again. You can quickly find your pattern. In general, what I'm looking to do is, let's say I'm going to do three sections, right? A, B, and C. Well, A, I didn't see crap, right? B, I didn't see crap, but C, I go through on my second pass and I nail them on a crane bait, creeping, crawling it next to a tree. Guess what I'm going to do the rest of the day? I'm not going to do the other passes. I'm just going to creep and crawl crane bait because I found a pattern. Once you find the pattern, once they're on it, forget about it. So that would be my advice there if you're a creaker. You know, don't be afraid to do multiple passes with multiple baits and find that pattern real quick. Buddy, I'll say this, Robert. I don't care how I'm getting them as long as I'm getting them. If you got to see them break the water and you can go back and catch them, God bless you. You know, it's not a bad thing. Sometimes
these when you're creaking down there, creaking, do you run into snakes?
Buddy.
That sounds like a snake-infested nightmare to me.
I am a snake attractant. That's a fact.
You've had some encounters in your past.
I am the only human being to ever hook a snake in the state of Wisconsin on a bucktail.
It's like the first one I've ever seen in the water.
Never ends. Yes, when you're creaking, right? It gets a little rough. It just ask Cody Dalton about creaking down there. Sorry. Yeah. Boys, I'll tell you what. West Virginia is hell on earth. If you can't laugh about it, it's the greatest place. I love it. Wouldn't trade for anything, but it is crazy. You know, I often say this. We will throw hands faster than anybody on planet Earth, Jay.
Throw hands?
Ask me what throwing hands is.
Throwing hands?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Listen, folks, if you can tell me in an email what throwing hands is, I will send you a Junior's Inlines because the rest of these people don't know what throwing hands is. But you West Virginia hillbillies definitely know what throwing hands is. Why don't you send me your best throwing a hand story, and I will send you a Junior's Inlines. Next up is Jake. Jake says, hey, guys, if Tyler Raiders... and the Bottom Raiders are performing live at the Muskie Shop Bash, will they be doing any Mouse Rat songs? Oh, my gosh. He said, my personal favorite is I Fell Into the Pit or Bye Bye Little Sebastian. Okay, I'm going to take a break here real quick. Jake, on the back of my truck. Muskie 360 sticker, right, Jay? Got it. Muskie Shop sticker. Guess what? Got it. Low boats. Got it. Giant Muskie Shop logo in the center of it. Got it. In the corner is a Mouse Rat sticker. Thank you very much. Everything is Muskie related on the Steve Paul mobile, except for my Mouse Rat sticker. If you don't know Mouse Rat, I don't care and I don't want to know you. I actually fish often in a Mouse Rat hoodie, so you crack me up. Thank you very much. he says, anyway, Muskie question. Going on vacation this summer to a small lake in New York that supposedly has a good population, but I'm a river guy and normally struggle to even catch a bluegill in a lake. What are, you know, first weekend in June, you know, I expect water temps to be similar to what you guys see out by the Muskie shop. I've lived near your temps. Max depths are 20 feet on about a 400-acre lake. No islands. Looks pretty boring, sort of like a big peanut. Where do I start looking? Jay, I would say what we started the podcast with. I'd throw that out there.
I bet he's dealing with boat traffic, though. New York?
Well,
yeah. I mean, I've been upstate New York a little bit. I mean, there's some more actually quite remote-looking areas that aren't, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Right,
you
right.
You get outside the city, you get above New Jersey and stuff, you start going up in there, and it's like, nutty. It kind of looks like Wisconsin.
Right, it gets crazy, but...
But, you know, anything in New York, I mean, it's going to have boat traffic. And if that's the case, that is going to be an issue. I would fish early in the morning.
Yeah, early and late. I like that he said the lake looked boring, like a big peanut.
Maybe he's talking, you know, it doesn't have much, you know, structure, right. And, you know, features. So, you know, it's just a kind of a bowl-shaped deal.
Well, what is
limited
what,
weeds, who knows?
What that brings up to me, though, if I'm thinking about what a peanut looks like, it's sort of tightens in the center.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what lake it is. I'm just throwing this out here. See if there's current. If there's a channel at the north and an outlet at the south, that might be a neck down. Right? That center of your peanut. Jay?
Yeah, if he's got something like that, could be, yeah.
This is the time in the podcast. I'm going to check on the center of your peanut. How is the center of your peanut, Jay?
The center?
Yes, of your peanut.
I don't know. Sounds like a hot spot.
Sounds like a hot spot. Sounds like a hot spot. Check out
upstate New York.
Check out the center of your peanut when you're in upstate New York. That is literally the best muskie advice I've ever heard, Jay. That should be on a t-shirt with your face.
Okay.
Check the center of your peanut in upstate New York. I mean, if the temps are that similar, you know, max depth of 20, it's going to be the same deal looking for those shallow zones. If they're not in the absolute shallows with their tails on the shoreline, start looking out to that first break. But like you said, Jay, a lot of these areas, upstate New York, you've got the city right there. And if they dump out of there on a weekend, it can get crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, like some of the lakes around here, the resort lakes, you go out super early. It's your best bet because, yeah, super late's a good bite, obviously, you know, the last half hour of light. But, you know, everybody and their brother just got back from the supper club around here. And you know what they're doing? They're going out there going for their walleye limit.
Going for the limit. I'm full on Salisbury steak and dinner rolls.
Oh, he had a great fish fry at the supper club.
Oh, it's so super.
Yeah, that's, anyway, that's, I guess, that's what I'd be looking at, you know, and if the water temp's in the 60s, did he say 60s?
No, he said it'd be similar to what you guys expect
so
in the
50s. If it was similar to us, you know, then you know, weeds are not fully grown, mm-hmm. and, you know, bluegills perhaps haven't spawned yet, so, I mean, looking at the shallow activity wouldn't be a bad call.
Mm-hmm. What I would do is start early, go in the middle of the day, have you a nice fish fry at the super club, mm-hmm. go out back out late there. Now, literally what we were talking about, early season stuff, look at the same thing. Find the warmest water. Check the middle of your peanut lake for see if it's the neck down, if there's current there.
Mm-hmm.
But be looking at those littoral zones, those food shelves, the shallow water, find the forage. If they're not up shallow, check the first break. I really don't expect them to go out over deep water and suspend, barring some massive culprit, right? Check those zones.
Sounds a little early for that, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Slow down. In one of my favorite things, I think it's Steve Hiding that said, I like to fish as fast as the fish will allow. Don't we all, right? That's a wonderful thing to say. But don't try to fish fast as the fish will allow all day long. Check speeds until you find it. Make mental notes. I'll say this. In the spring, I should have said earlier, early season is the time to pay as much attention as possible because the margin for error is very small, right? The speed is just superbly important. So fish as fast as you can to cover water, but fish different speeds until you find the correct speed, right? Small presentation, slow, and you know, you might want to start fast, but slow it down, speed it up, slow it down, speed it up until something happens and pay attention, and you'll get dialed in that way. Lucas. Hey, Steve. I'm planning on showing up to meet you imbeciles at the Muskie Shop Bash. Says, just wondering if the Minocqua Burger King will be catering, and is it frowned upon to bring a case of Pepsi? Meow. Wow. Jay, I don't know. I don't think the Burger King's catering, right?
Well, BYOP. I've been saying that for a while.
Is it BYOK?
Bring BYOP.
Bring
your own Pepsi.
Bring your own Pepsi.
Yeah, you can do that. Sure. Catering at the Burger King?
Bring your own king.
I don't know. That's a stretch. We'll have to look into that one.
You want
to
bring your own Burger King to the I've eaten Burger King in the Muskie Shop parking lot. If you want to bring Burger King to the Muskie Shop parking lot, feel free to eat it. Please dispose of your wrapper. Okay? That's all we're saying.
We're going to have a food truck there, and we're working on stuff for food. So,
okay,
in all seriousness, but
but if you can bring Burger King in the parking lot, I guess.
Oh, sure. Yeah, a lot of the stuff will be outside. We've got a large parking lot, and the neighbor's parking lot. Len's truck has been gracious enough to accept any overflow. So if you're pulling a rig, I mean, they got probably 30 acres.
There you go. What more do you want?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the stage is going to take up, I don't know, what's the size of the stage we got, Steve?
We bought it from Kiss.
Kiss, okay.
Right,
yeah.
So it's 9 Ampeg 8x10, 14 okay. Marshall full stacks, double bass kit.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost big enough to backline Joe Booker and the Top Raiders.
It's a 40,000-watt Crown PA system,
right.
I think, powered.
Yeah,
so it's... It'll destroy windows, you know, at 300, 400 yards. You know, you hit the right frequency, it's pumping out that much power.
The bottom Raiders have never sound better. That's all I'm going to say.
They're going to be good.
It's going to be ripping. It'll probably be like the back of somebody's pickup truck and a karaoke machine, but we're trying our best. Jay's going to go down to the Dollar General and buy a $10 karaoke machine with a mic.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's going to be somewhere in between the Kiss stage
and the karaoke machine.
And the karaoke machine out of someone's trunk.
It'll be somewhere in there. It's fine.
It'll be between there. Yeah.
Right. Jay, we're doing our best here, folks. You know,
we're trying.
You
want to
bring
really
your own Pepsi? Bring your own Pepsi. Bring me a Pepsi.
A lot of people excited for this bash. Oh, man, it's not far off.
Listen.
It really isn't.
I'm excited about hearing the Smitties.
I know.
Love them. Get out there. Bring the Smitties a Pepsi.
Yeah.
They're down. Whatever. These boys smoke their own meats. They're ready to musky fish, boys. Come out. Check it out.
Yep. They smoke their own meats.
These guys.
Yep.
Oh my God, Jay, have you ever smoked your own meat?
Sounds like a new video. And get it hosted by Fred. You know, I mean,
hey,
Chef
folks.
Fred.
This is
Northwoods
Chef.
Meat smoking.
This is Chef Fred. I'm gonna. Bend over and smoke my own meat.
Yeah, you are twisted.
Mm. Oh, hey, last one, Jason. Okay, here's the scenario. You're fishing with a guy and you're in front of the boat throwing a bulldog. Mm-hmm. The guy at the back of the boat is throwing a crane bait. Well, A, you sound like a creaker from West Virginia.
He's a creaker.
Crane bait's a dead giveaway. The guy throwing cranes is seeing a lot of fish, but the follows are low and slow. This has been happening for 4 days or for 4 hours. Okay, so here's the scenario again. Bulldog, crane bait. Cranes are seeing fish. Bulldogs isn't.
Okay, the bulldog guy up front's not seeing any fish, but he continues to throw bulldogs for right. 4 hours.
He says, should the guy throwing the bulldogs change baits? Option two. Hold on. Should the guy throwing cranes change baits because they're not whacking it?
Good question. Really good question.
He said, no, I've heard different takes on this. My tendency would be stay with the cranes since they seem to be getting at least some interest. But I've had guys say they would take it off. As for the bulldog, I'm thinking of taking it off as an easier choice.
Wow. That's right up your alley, being the top guide, you know, in
Creekville,
Northeastern Tennessee.
Oh, come give me a break. Whatever. Who cares? Duh. That's like, hey, I'm king of the creekers. So here's my thought. I hate to take off a bait that's moving fish.
Okay. Right. Okay.
I've done it, and then we see no fish. And then I put it back on, and we see fish again. Okay. What you forgot to ask, is he throwing a 206, 207, right? I've had him moving on 207s and put a 206 on, I'm getting thwacked. Okay?
You've moved him on 207, which is a 7-inch, and then you switched to an 8?
206.
And then they ate it? Oh, then you went down to a 6. Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
And I don't know. Do you, they still sell the fives, the little fives?
Yeah, they make a few of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got them. I will often, my main move, the reason I said 206, because I didn't have the mid 205. If I'm moving on the 207, which is my typical one I throw, and they're not hitting, I'll go down to the 205, right? If they're going low and they're coming in beneath that, right? If they're coming in beneath a crane, which is a wide wobble, that's when I'm breaking out the big norm. Wide wobble, little bit deeper, get it down in their face, right? Bill Norman or a big norm, right? You creakers know what a Bill Norman is. You guys that are just new to the game know what a big norm is. Big norm is a musky version of a Bill Norman. It's diesel. Hopefully more will be at the musky shop here shortly. That's my trick for that. So if they're coming low and slow on that, I'm going to go with the 05, or I'm going to go with the Bill Norman, the big norm, get it down there, get it in their face, right?
Mm-hmm.
As per the guy on the bulldog, right? If he's not seeing anything, and we're seeing multiple fish show up on crankbaits, I would switch off of the bulldog, and that's when I would go AC Shiner out of the front. Right? AC Shiner, Chad Shad would be another option. As far as a modern option, the other option I would throw out there would be the 22 short.
So the only response he's getting out of that boat with those two different scenarios is the crane, a 7-inch crane. And what you're saying is, I'm not taking off a bait that's, you know, that's showing fish. So I'm going to downsize slightly on that.
Hopefully they eat it.
Right. And the guy in front, he's got to switch from rubber to a crankbait, try to adapt.
Right.
And give it something a little bit different, and the fish are running deep, so get something a little bit deeper diver, like a depth rater.
Right. Baby depth rater is a good option. Lunging 22 short. Like I said, God, Jay, I think we touched on this one time earlier. You have to remind me. I don't think they make AC Shiners. Is not a bait that's really super available anymore. That's a tiny little crankbait, which... Think about the lunging short lip 22, or how do they put that? Is it 22 short or something?
Short square. S.
That would get it done. I would lead the boat with the smaller presentation and follow it up with, if I'm moving them on a 207 and they're just not hitting, go to 205 and then put the guy on a small crank in the front, right? Play that game, and I would go back through the same pass. And if you connect, if you don't move them, put the guy back on the 207 and wait till you find one that's dumb enough to eat it.
Is that your typical scenario then? If you're getting follows on something, on one particular style of bait,
right,
but they're low and slow, or they're somewhat interested, but low, downsize.
Downsize, but like I said, I hate
not
fishing.
Not upsize. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a shock and awe thing to be said.
Yeah.
And sometimes that'll pay off, but not often. I mean, I've done it so many times. where we're moving them, right? But they're not eating. If I've got two anglers, the guy that's moving them is staying on what's moving, and the other guy's going to play games, right? My goal, and I'll just say this, my goal by the end of the day is that both of us are dialed in, whether I've got one, two, four, five people in the boat. The ultimate goal at the end of the day is we're all throwing the same thing. Sounds ridiculous, but what I'm saying in that is not actually that I want everybody throwing the same thing, but I want everybody so dialed in that every potential cast is a catch, right?
Oh, you're trying to find a pattern.
Right. So let's say, let's go back in the crazy machine for the creakers. We got a lot of creakers this week. You know, I might want to go from a crane to a Jack Cobb 5-inch because that's what they're hitting, and I'm throwing a lemon back Jack Cobb 5-inch, and everybody's throwing it because everybody's catching fish. We're all trying to get dialed in. We've got to have, and the way I look at it is we've got to have a point of reference, right? So let's say it's me and you, Jay, right? And we have spent a night drinking moonshine and we're out creaking the next day, right?
Yeah.
And you're throwing a 207 and you're moving the heck out of fish and I'm not seeing anything. The best practice I would do would start throwing the 205 and you stay on the 207 because if you stop seeing fish, something has changed, right? Try to keep it as dialed in as you can. Play with the options there and just really, really, really dial in around it. You know, a lot of times the guy that's moving fish but not catching fish doesn't want to stick with it. That would be the option. Go from the 207 to the 205. The guy up front goes smaller than that. And then the guy in the front is just rotating through baits until he finds a downsized presentation that's smaller than 7 inches but has that wide balsa wobble that they're obviously attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thought process there. Again, though, in a perfect world, we're going to keep moving fish until we start catching fish by changing things minutely. You know?
Yeah, good stuff.
That's the best way I can look at it. You know, obviously there's speed, there's presentation. I've seen it where it is a difference of they're moving on a 207 crane, but they really want the, what's it, the little grandma Jay? Is it 5 inches or something?
6 inch.
6 inch little grandma. Well, they moved on that, but they really want that 6 inch grandma twitched and paused.
Yeah.
Right? Dial in on what's working. So the bulldog guy, forget about him. If he's not moving fish, let's move on. Dial in around what's working. So that's why, this is why we all own a billion baits, right? So I'm sitting here in the bait cave and I'm looking down just the row of sub seven and sub cranks, right? 7 inch shallow rater, you know, flat, 7 inch jointed. You know, there's Wileys, there's F-18s, there's AC Shiners, there's Cobb baits, there's Crane baits, right? There's Wileys. There's stuff that hasn't been made in 40 years. Now we get into slammers. Now we're into big game twitch, right? The reason we all love all these different baits, and the wife goes, why do you need 185 crankbaits? You know what I'm saying? Day to day, it can be a minute difference. Dial in. It's the same thing. If, let's say the guy, let's reverse this scenario, right? Let's say the guy throwing crankbaits not seeing anything, but the guy that's throwing a bulldog seeing a ton of fish, right? The same move.
Same move.
If he's throwing a mag dog, go to a spring dog. Or a regular bulldog.
Yeah, right, because there's certainly different sizes available, right? And in the soft plastic world.
And that's why we love this bait addiction, because you're sitting here going, well,
that's why you got to have a lot. Right. That's a good point.
I've got to have, you know, a black pounder.
Be prepared to adapt at a moment's notice.
You know, in my boat, I don't have a lot of what I would say. I have a lot of variety, but I have a lot of I have a lot of repeats. Where it will be like a black pounder, right? And then
you know, you were talking about that a week or two ago, or it's just like they're going on light colored, I think you said shallow invaders. It's mm-hmm. just like, well, I got to have a shallow invader for the other two guys in the boat.
Now, I had a...
That's moving them, and that's working. Here you go, guys. Show this.
I had a trip here recently where it was nothing but a Cisco Bulldog regular size. You know, like the 12-inch Bulldog?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, if I didn't have four of those in the boat for the ones we lost, the ones that got tore up, it would have been over with. You know, and God, that's the thing about baits, man. You know, I could sit here and go on forever about, like, there's days you feel like you got too many baits, and there's days you go, why do I not have enough? Right? Of anything I hate is having a one-off, because you're going to lose it, and that's the end of it. And you go, well,
yeah,
you know, they're right. Moving on. I've seen it. When a bait that drove me nuts was when you guys first got those eel pout Medusas, right? And everybody's buying those. They're selling like crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was just like, I had like two of them. Both of them got torn up from catching fish. And then it was like, I can't get any more, and I stopped catching fish. You know, you're like, ah! I'm not advocating you gotta have a ton, but have variety in that, you know. You know, we deal with a lot of new muskie anglers on the podcast, and we always tell them, you know, you don't need a ton of baits, but when you're trying to get dialed in, it's nice to have variety and options.
Yeah, a little, make it an obvious variety. You know, don't get, well, you know, get something light and one light, one dark, or, you know, one neon and one natural.
What I
you
think,
know,
what,
if you're getting two of something, you know,
I think what happens though is, and we all do this, is we will catch a fish on one bait and we will buy 10 of them. Right? I caught him on, you know, a UV Bulldog that's like that weird sunrise color, and then you buy a bunch more and you never see another fish on it.
That's what they're hitting on.
That's what they're hitting.
No, that's what they hit on.
Right. And that's a dangerous concept, but
that's two different, yeah.
And so having, you know, a variety of minnow baits is a must in my book. A variety of bucktail sizes obviously should be a must in everybody's book. Again, as far as baits, you got to have a variety of crankbaits, bucktails, rubber. You know, I mean, I throw, what is it, 10-inch Suix? There's 10s and 9s, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking Franken Suix or the little ones. You know, a couple 9s, couple 10s, we're done. Right? Little bastards in a top raider and fat bastard, right? So you got a little bastard, yeah, fat bastard, a top raider. You got to be all right. You know what I'm saying? A jackpot and a weagle and be done with it. Find that variety in those crankbait elements is really important. You know, when we're thinking gliders as well, you said it earlier, the 4-inch Phantom versus 7-inch Phantom is a world of difference. Those are where I really focus on variety. I know I'm sort of crawling down the rabbit hole in a different realm here, but, you know, those are the places that's important, because you're not going to catch the same fish on a pounder that you would on a spring dog or a micro Medusa, right? But when fish are moving hot enough for top water, I could probably get the same fish on a weagle versus a jackpot a lot of days. You know, does that make any sense? Like, sort of pick your poison on where to expand your bait collection.
Yeah. I mean, and really be honest, I mean, what looks like a subtle change in size is actually probably pretty impactful to the, right, to the fish, you know.
Oh,
you go up one size, like like in the chaos stuff, the Medusas, the deuces, as they call them, you know.
Yeah.
America. You know, you can right there in the
Cody Dalton.
Yeah. You know, what was I saying? Oh, you know, like the mid size to the regular size, you know. It's just like if you had one in each hand, you know, from a distance, you'd be like, it looks like the same bait, but
yeah,
you know, there's a couple ounce difference, and the water displacement's for sure, you know, greatly different.
It's greatly different. Same thing with your blades. A 10 to an 8 is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Giant.
So,
difference.
You know, is it going to matter in your diving rise? No. Is it going to matter? But yeah, have a variety of blades, a variety of cranks, variety of rubber. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah, pick them wisely. Ask around
wisely.
Yep, choose wisely. Oh, he chose wisely.
This is like, yeah, Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail or whatever. Choose wisely.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, yep. Idiot. Jehovah spelt with an I. I'm talking about. Sorry. Oh, folks. It was another.
Good stuff tonight. Good stuff.
Rambling.
Good questions.
Rambling.
We love those great questions, guys.
Love
them coming.
Keep it coming. We got a possum hunt, folks. Get on the possum hunt.
We got a possum hunt going.
I'm cold. I'm tired. That's it for another Muskie 360 podcast. Say goodnight, Doris. Good night.
Did you get caught chasing tail? Is your wife sick of you spending all your money on headlocks? Did she catch you melting down another bulldog in her good pots and pans? If she says it's over, but the muskies are still biting, you need to call the law offices of Ditcher Quick and Hyde.
I'm Pat Menards, lead muskie divorce attorney. I'm here for you 24/7. Well, unless there's a hot fight, especially if it's top water, or if a major moon phase conflicts with your court date.
The law offices of Ditcher Quick and Hyde, the world's only muskie divorce experts. You might not ever see your kids again, but she will never get your tackle.